Sairam, dear listeners, and this is Arvind here from Team Radio Sai, welcoming you to another segment of Afternoon Satsang. And as always, I am joined by Brother Prem, and both of us offer our most humble salutations at the lotus feet of our beloved Lord Sai. Dear listeners, we hope that you have been listening to the last 5 minutes, this beautiful, melodious instrumental piece that has been playing. Well, it is no coincidence. Last week we had started off on an adventure, if I can say so. It was an adventure where we decided to go through the life story, his story of our dear beloved Bhagwan Baba. And we had reached a point in the story where Swami, little Satya, was being called as the guru by all his classmates and his friends. It is no coincidence that right now the bhajan that we heard too, Gurudeva, Priyadeva, Sai Deva, Dayamaya, that it was played now, and we just walked into the studios as Raghu was concluding his segment on Seva, and totally we were taken aback in pleasantness when we realized that he is playing this instrumental bhajan, because we are in the process of reliving the glory of how Bhagwan was the guru to those children in those times, and right now this bhajan is going on. Before we delve into the afternoon satsang, I would definitely like to take a few minutes to speak about this particular instrumental album that is being proposed as a Sai Blossom production to be out during the Aradhana Divas, that is the 24th of April. Now, you know, we had a lot of requests coming in asking for instrumental bhajans, because there is something magical about music. Music is a language of its own, and it communicates to all hearts irrespective of whether people understand the language or not. Music is understood. And bhajans are another thing that are universal in their appeal. Combine these two universal appeals of music and of bhajans, and the combination is simply irresistible. And therefore, with the melodious notes of the flute, the first ever album, instrumental album from Sai Blossoms, will be blossoming, will be fruiting, if I can say so, on the 24th of April, and it will be available. After that, we intend to come out with more such instrumental albums. Hope you really enjoy this, because a lot of labor of love has gone into making this instrumental. Well, with that elaborate introduction about that instrumental piece, Sairam Prem.
Sairam Arvind, and what a beautiful piece that was. And dear listeners, there are many more such pieces in that, and as Arvind was explaining...
Oh, the Chitta Chora is unforgettable in that.
Amazing. And you know, as Arvind was explaining, the main instrument in that is going to be the flute. But the following instruments, the instruments which will be playing the following lines of the bhajans, will be varied instruments, and I think some very...
unique ones.
You know, revealing talents have come out in this...
Exactly.
In this particular product of Sai Blossom, and we are as eager as everybody else for the launch of these products.
They're almost meditative, Prem. I would like to listen to them at home, in my car, everywhere, you know.
And there's a very interesting thing I heard a while ago. Mm-hmm. You know, when you go into a deep state of meditation, it mm-hmm. is believed that in one of the most sublime states, you will start hearing the sound of the flute.
Oh.
In fact, it is believed even in non-Indian traditions that when you go into a very trance-like state during meditation, you hear the sound of the flute. In fact, that is why they say that, you know, when Gopikas actually were listening to the sound of the flute always, they used to think of Krishna. But actually speaking, their love for Krishna had taken them to a sublime state of trance where they were hearing the sound of the flute.
Yeah, there's something magical about the sound of the flute, because it is produced by something that's absolutely hollow.
Right.
When you rid yourself completely of your concept of yourself, that is when, you know, the notes of the flute are heard. You can see this. You stand on the seashore. If you concentrate, the instrument that can produce best the sound that you hear of the waves is the flute. Pick up an empty conch shell and put it to your ear, and what you hear in it are the notes of a flute. There's something magical, divine, and simply absorbing in the notes of the flute. And well, as you said, we are glad that for the first instrumental album, we have the lead being played by the flute.
And coming back to Satyam Shivam Sundaram, dear listeners, we started last week by saying that maybe we will have this as once in a fortnight discussion, but here we are in the consecutive week talking about the second part of Satyam Shivam Sundaram, because the feedback we got was overwhelming, to say the least.
Really, Prem, I remember one feedback where the listener said that when you started off with the topic, I heard it and I thought, oh no, why this topic? Because, you know, there are a lot of books on this. We have seen it, we have heard it so many times. But then the listener went on to say that as the story unfolded, it brought so many new insights and it drenched me in Sai's love. The listener also said that it was a divine Thursday nectar. Do whatever you want, but please do not deny me this Thursday nectar. And dear listener, that mail gave us so much encouragement. It was as if Swami himself was reinforcing our decision, saying that what you decided is right, because all said and done, my life is my message.
And there was another feedback which said that, you know, why don't you continue only this, and all the insights which you would like to bring in, you can bring it as part of the story instead of having separate sessions with unique themes on Swami's message. I think all of Swami's message will come out even as we go through Swami's life. That was another feedback we got. So what we thought was, you know, to take a middle path between all these feedback.
Because many times, you know, we get events happening in Prashanthi Nilayam, and there are so many things happening in the world too, where Swami's teachings are very, very much relevant. So we would like to keep some satsangs open for such topics that might arise. And therefore, we decided that for a second consecutive week now, we will carry on with the Satyam Shivam Sundaram. But after this day, we will do it as we had originally planned, on a fortnightly basis, where we'll have one non-Satyam Shivam Sundaram satsang, followed by a Satyam Shivam Sundaram satsang.
And in fact, I think a couple of years back, a listener wrote to us with three questions which set us thinking. Very, very relevant questions based on satsang we had before. Maybe a future satsang, we could discuss those answers which we thought of.
Exactly. Those questions, dear listener, who wrote to us, I know you're listening there. So thank you for those questions. They were thought-provoking. Hope the answers that were provided satisfied you. And the best thing is, that has given us so much of food for thought. If you are satisfied with our answers, let us confess that we are not wholly satisfied. We would like to read more of Swami's discourses, study them in depth, and come out with a more comprehensive answer for ourselves and for everyone. Thank you so much for those questions. And dear listeners, it is exactly these kind of things that we would like to keep every alternate satsang apart for, so that if at all there are questions, or if there are, you know, as we said, current events happening, so many things happening in the mandir, to discuss those. So therefore, every fortnight we'll have one non-Satyam Shivam Sundaram satsang and one Satyam Shivam Sundaram satsang.
Right, and having said that, you know, even as we are going back and reading Satyam Shivam Sundaram and literally getting lost in it, there are so many messages in that, and Swami was giving out messages, you know, in every instant Swami was trying to tell something, and the more deeper you look into it, the more you, you know, muse over it, there's so many more messages which come in our mind. And I think today, as we go through Swami's childhood, the paths which follow, I think we will try to highlight some of those incidences which Swami not only revealed his divinity that he was doing all through, but you know, the message which Swami was giving it was difficult to expect that from a boy of 7 years of age, 5 years of age. But also the message which Swami was giving, and as you mentioned, Swami was being referred to as Guru.
Correct.
Because that was the kind of, you know, the place which Swami took naturally among his peers was that of a Guru.
Exactly. And Prem, one thing you will notice is that though Satya, little Satya, did extraordinary things and amazing things, and in all ways, you know, not only in terms of the miracles and manifestations, not only in terms of teachings, but he did all of these passing through the same kind of stages that, you know, anyone goes through, you know, schooling, being an ideal son, being an ideal brother, being an ideal friend, being an ideal teacher. And he set ideals for everything. You know, they often say that when it comes to Rama avatar, follow the actions that Rama did. Okay, because Rama Vigrahan Dharma, he was an embodiment of Dharma. He is known as the perfect human, He's called that way. And therefore they say, follow the actions of Rama. But when it comes to Krishna, they say, follow the teachings of Krishna. Okay, because as a child, there are some things that nobody can ever imagine doing what Krishna did. Because it's just not possible. So, do all that Rama did and do all that Krishna said. But I think in Swami's case, we can say that we should do what Swami did and do what he said too. That unique combination of Rama and Krishna we find in our little, not little Satya. I mean, he was little in terms of the stature, but in terms of his nature and his glory, there is nothing that can measure it at all. So, he went through everything. For example, did you know that a certain P.T. Krishnamachari, he had the great good fortune, great blessing, God knows the benefit of the goodness of how many lifetimes, he had the chance of doing Aksharabhyasa for little Satya. You know, Aksharabhyasa is the first time when you initiate a child into the alphabet.
Alphabet.
And so little Satya was initiated by P.T. Krishnamachari, and as Swami says, during those days there were no slates on which they would write and learn. So he learnt his alphabet by writing on the sand.
Right.
And there was one instance where again he showed that he is the guru, because his grasp was so far, so good. He grasped all this so quickly that he used to teach the other boys how to learn to write the alphabets. So it would all be held like an open classroom on a ground filled with, you know, with the sands, where Satya would write on the sands and others too would write on the sands and practice. And that's how academically he became a guru for all of them, because he was the brilliant, most brilliant student in the class, teaching all of them how to learn the alphabet, even when he joined the elementary school in Puttaparthi.
And even as you were saying that, you know, Swami went through the regular process of childhood. You know, in one point, Kasturi writes in Satyam Shyam Sundaram that there's the teacher of Swami by name Subarnachari. Subarnachari. And he says that he has written a book in which he describes Swami's childhood. He says Swami was a well-behaved boy and unostentatious. That's the word he uses. And Kasturi refers to that word again in the following paragraph and says how difficult it would have been for the Lord of the cosmos to be unostentatious,
exactly.
To hold back his powers, to hold back his glory in those childhood days. And that's what we've seen, the kind of, you know, when we look at Swami's life, we say hardships, we say a simple life, but for Swami it was no different, because Swami, I think as God, he would have identified with every village child of that period, with whatever difficulties they went through. We are looking at as, you know, the Lord at whose feet Mother Lakshmi sits. That's correct. How the Lord is described. And here he is born in a very, very humble household, and where he is one among 20 children. And among that, he was not a grabbing child. He was a child who was readily giving away whatever the other children wanted.
See, when you're talking about, you know, unostentatious, I'm reminded of, you know, one example that Swami used to give in his discourses. Swami says that if the avatar had come down to the earth, like the great Lord Mahavishnu, you know, with all the four arms, the Shankha Chakra Gadadhari, you know, in that form, Swami says that you would have put me in a museum and maybe collected a rupee for, you know, darshan, like I would have been a curio, something that satisfies people's curiosity. But the avatar always comes to feel kinship. And you know, Swami used to sing that famous padyam, Ananda Balude, Ananda Balude. What a beautiful pun on the word, you know. Ananda Balude, that child of Nanda, Ananda Balude, as the child of bliss, has come again to mingle with his, you know, his bantus. So, the main purpose of the avatar's descent is to give joy through kinship, so that everybody enjoys the relationship. And in order to make that possible, the Lord so naturally takes on all the limitations of humans. I mean, it is, if we look at it, if I have to, you know, stay like a beggar among beggars, that would be so tough for me, because I am used to a certain kind of life. Yes, it is tough to go to the higher life also. You know, if suddenly I am exposed to a very lavish lifestyle, I may not be able to, you know, match up there. Recognizing that, Swami comes down, and that's why he says, with a child, I'm a child. With a woman, I'm a woman. With a man, I'm a man. With a poor person, I'm a poor person. He just comes down, or whatever, goes to the level at which the people are, so that everybody feels kinship and says, hey, you know what? Swami, no, he's just like me only here. He's just like me. Swami is just like me. I can feel with him. And that is when they're able to feel friendship with him. And that is why, though all the children called him guru, adored him as a guru, because he did astounding things, spellbinding things, they still felt that love and kinship with him because he was their dear Satya.
Right. And so beautifully Swami used to say that, don't walk ahead of me, I will not follow you. Don't walk behind me, I will not lead you, but walk beside me, let's be friends. And that was the very life Swami was leading with these young boys. And as you said, you know, Swami had to stand out, at the same time stand amongst them.
Wow.
You know?
Yes.
So Swami started doing this thing of pulling out things from an empty bag. That was one of the earliest things which Swami did. And Swami would say that, you know, even his discourse later, Swami had told those boys that there is an angel. Swami used to refer to Satyamma, actually, the village deity.
Hmm.
And Swami would say that he gives me whatever I ask for.
Satyamma is that Satyabhama
that we discussed, which
right?
We discussed. Right.
The temple built by Kondama Raju.
Right. Hmm. So Swami would say that, you know, whatever I ask Satyamma, she gives me. She puts in this bag and I pull it out of the bag and give it to you.
Hmm.
And Swami would ask the kids, what do you want? And somebody would say a peppermint, and somebody would say a pencil, somebody would say a book. And Swami would pull out, and Swami would tell them that, but mind it, don't go home and share this with your elders. Because if you tell anybody, this would stop.
Hmm.
So Swami says, for many years, even when Swami was a small kid, maybe a 4 or 5 years old, Swami would do this, but none of the children had shared this with the elders in their family.
It was like their own little
right.
secret. When you narrate this, Prem, you know what I feel? I feel here was the Lord of the universe. And he's asking, what do you want? He's holding one empty bag there and he says, what do you want? Ask and I shall give it to you. And you know what the children ask? They say, give us a pencil. Give us peppermints. I feel like, you know, almost laughing at them saying, why couldn't you ask? Why couldn't you ask for something grand? But before I laugh, Prem, you know, it almost comes like a slap on my face, thinking that, is this not what I'm doing with my Lord even today? What looks like it might look like a small jolly and a useless kind of bag, but that bag can produce everything because it's in the hands of the Lord. And when the Lord asks me, what is it that you want? I ask my own equivalent of pencils and peppermints. And that is why, you know, that is one more statement that Swami always says, that in the beginning I give you all that you want, so that one day, you know, that is the hope that the Lord expresses, so that one day you will ask me for what I have come to give actually. What that empty hand holds is everything. And let us, you know, when we have this chance, when we have realized who Swami is, in our prayers, in our request to him, let us not ask for pencils and peppermints, because he is the Kalpavriksha.
And in fact, talking of Kalpavriksha, the Kalpavriksha still stands, that tamarind tree on the hillock, you know, where Swami used to take all these kids. You know, these things which Swami used to do was not only to reveal his divinity, because Swami wanted to capture the attention of these youngsters, you know, these little children.
Mm.
Swami wanted to draw them to goodness. That was the goal which Swami used to tell even in the later discourses. I didn't do this to show my powers off. I wanted to draw them to the good path, and to do that, you need to stand out.
Correct.
And Swami would, you know, drag these boys early in the morning, make them have a bath in the river. And Swami would say, those days, the people of the village used to wake up at 7 o'clock.
Okay.
But Swami had, you know, through all these little trinkets, had, mesmerized the kids to get up early in the morning, have a early morning bath.
You know, he had held such a sway over their minds that whatever he said, they would do.
Right.
Because this was Satyam, that's what they used to call him. Satyam was somebody who could do anything.
Right.
And so we'll do anything for him.
And Swami used to take these kids after a bath to that Kalpavriksha. Swami used to sit on a branch, and Swami would ask the kids who used to, you know, stand around in the ground. Swami would say, what fruit do you want?
Hmm.
And Swami would pluck whatever fruit they wanted from that tamarind tree.
From a tamarind tree. You know, Prem, I remember seeing a photograph that my uncle had taken in the 1960s.
Okay.
Yes, of course, it's much later than what we are talking now. It's at least about 30 years after after the period that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. But even in a photograph in 1960s, if you have a look, the whole hill is bare. There's only one single tree standing on that hill, and that is the Kalpavriksha. And the photograph that my uncle has taken, you know, you can see the Chitravati flowing. There's a hill, and then there is this Kalpavriksha on top of it. The Kalpavriksha's reflection you can see in the Chitravati waters. That photo is so beautiful for me because when I see that photo, I remember the episode that Swami narrates, you know. He says, they would all be down, you know, and Swami would challenge them and say, let's see, let's have a running race. Who can get to the top of the hill first? You know, and as I said, the whole hill was barren, bare, except for this one tamarind tree on the top. And so, from anywhere, from any side, you know, from the river, it's a single goal to the top. The top is only one. You can start off from any base. All the boys would start running. And suddenly, they'll see that Satyam is no longer with them. So, they used to often think that, after all, Satyam was so tiny. And Swami so sweetly, so cutely in his discourse, you know, so cute that is. Swami says, see, now only I'm so small. Imagine how small I was then. Swami says, then, you know, we used to burst out laughing in the middle of the discourse when Swami used to say that. And Swami said, yeah, so all his friends would think that Satya is gone. He's left back. He's lagging behind. And they would think that it serves him right. You know, he thinks that he'll have a race. So they huff and puff and it's quite a steep climb, you know. Even today the Kalpavriksha is there. There are about 250 to 300 steps leading to the Kalpavriksha. So even if you normally climb, it's so tiring. Imagine those days it was not on steps, it was directly the hill. And they reach on top, they are tired, they are huffing and puffing, and they look back and Satya is nowhere to be seen. And then he calls out, hey, I'm here. And they see, sitting on one of the top branches of the tree is there Satyam. And they have no idea. You know, they used to think he's cheating, he's using those special powers. But instantly, you know, all that angst that they had, that, you know, Satyam cheated, he did some magic he has done and reached off, he didn't run. All that would vanish because, as you said, Swami would ask, what do you want? You want a mango? Take, here's a mango for you. You want an apple? Take, here's an apple for you. Any fruit that the children asked for, he would pluck from the branches of that tamarind tree and give it to them.
And you know, even as you're narrating, see, these are all documented events from Swami's childhood. When it is said that Swami did this, Swami did that. But I'm sure that in those years when Swami spent with these, Swami would say about 10 boys, 10 or 12 boys. They were always Swami's playmates, you know. Swami must have done so many other things which never surfaced and which we never came to know. And Swami didn't care that we know or not.
Really?
Because it was not done for the world to know at all. You know, I'm reminded of something where somebody told me that, you know, they were going for a morning walk. And, you know, for some reason, he just craned his neck and, you know, looked inside a branch and looked beyond a certain, you know, twig. And he found a very, very beautiful flower.
Okay.
And he shared this thought with me. He said, see, God has created such a beautiful flower, but he has kept it so away from, maybe it would bloom and it would fade away even without anybody noticing. But that does not matter to God. He still makes it perfect. So when God does something, it is perfection for perfection's sake. It's not because somebody is going to come and see it and enjoy it. Somebody is going to come by and see it and learn something from it. That also is there, but there might be so many events which have happened in that childhood, which Swami just did it for those people who were there.
And as you rightly put it, Prem, when things are done perfectly for perfection's sake, the other things are automatically taken care of. I mean, if you think that people are going to see, so they'll be learning, they'll be observing, and therefore we have to be perfect. The minute you're perfect, every other thing are automatically taken off. People will taken care of, I mean, because people will observe and they will learn because it is perfection. You know, this Kalpavriksha, I think you should even narrate that. You know, you told me about that boy who used to have a soft corner for Swami.
Right, you know, Swami very beautifully narrates that incident. These 12 boys used to always be running around. And Swami used to say that they used to run all over the place. They used to go. And another thing Swami mentions in a discourse is that those days, the Satyabhama temple was the perimeter of the, you know, the border of the village.
Even today, it's almost like the border.
Right.
The village has grown for about maybe half a kilometer beyond that.
No, earlier, the village used to be on the other side of Satyabhama temple.
Oh, correct. Yes, yes.
Right,
yes.
You know where the Shivalayam right now stands, where Swami's birthplace is, Swami's home.
So, all the places that we know as modern Puttaparthi did not exist during those days.
Right.
And a Puttaparthi that we rarely visit on any of our trips to Puttaparthi is the actual Puttaparthi
village. Right, it's actually beyond the Satyabhama and the Gopal Swami temple.
Okay.
When you go into that lane where you see Swami's birthplace, the Shivalayam, which stands now. And then if you go a little further, where the mosque is now, those were the places where actually the Puttaparthi was.
So dear listeners, next time you visit Puttaparthi, maybe you should take a cycle rickshaw, or even you can walk, if you're able to. It's about just 2 to 3 kilometers. Visit Swami's birthplace, and after that just take a walk around to see, the village has grown modern. But even in its modernity, you can see how old the village is. You can just imagine how that village would have been about 90 years back.
Right. And in fact, even as late as, 3 years ago, another house which was standing beside Swami's residence. We're going to speak about that person, very, very noble and pious soul.
Correct. And the Karnam's house.
Karnam Subbamma. Her house used to be there, and even when we were students, when we used to visit the Shivalayam, they used to show us that window and say that this was the window through which Subbamma used to feed Swami when he was a little child. And yeah, as I was telling you, just a couple of years back, it was demolished, and another building is coming up there.
One piece of history is gone forever.
And Swami also was like that, when Swami's house was crumbling, and they came and told Swami this house is. The idea of informing Swami was that Swami would tell them to restore it. And Swami just said, yeah, remove it and build a temple there. For Swami, it never mattered, because the Swami who has come to teach us that you and I are not the body, and
He has been ruthless that way. For example, I remember even in Vrindavan, everybody, all the people who were there from the beginning of Vrindavan, the Whitefield Ashram, when it was began, Vrindavan was epitomized by that tree and the beautiful Krishna statue there.
Exactly.
And when they told Swami that devotees are increasing in number, what we should do, it seemed almost heartless and cold. Swami just said, cut the tree and build the hall. every devotee's heart was pained. But that is the kind of detachment that Swami had, He never felt that this should be there because I'm attached. Nothing. It is for the devotees. His attachment is only to love. And in order to share that love and spread the love to as many as possible, anything that needs to be done, he will do.
And Arvind, talking of less known incidents in Swami's childhood, I didn't want to narrate this incident, but I'm so tempted to narrate it.
Okay.
Before that, let me come to that little boys incident which you had asked for. There was this 12 boys, 10 to 12 boys, and there was this one boy who was very fond of Swami. And Swami used to say that it was because of his past birth, this one, that he had a special attachment to Swami, in spite of being in part of that group, which was all of them were attached to Swami. So this boy, would come to Swami and say, Swami, in Satyam, you lay on my lap, you rest your head on my lap. You're doing so much work, you're working at home, you're running around, you take some rest, lay on my lap. And Swami would say that I didn't need rest, but because that boy asked with so much love, I used to lie on his lap for a few moments. And Swami said that, after that, the boy said, it's surprising that I had a leg pain from the morning, and the moment you lay your head on my lap, you rested your head on my lap, the headache, the pain in my leg has vanished.
Wow.
Okay, and this news spread among the other 10 or 12 boys, and everybody started fighting that, Satyam, you have to place your head on my lap.
Satyam, put your head on my shoulder, put on my head.
And it almost became like a game where Swami said that, every boy had a chance of about 1 minute. Swami used to lay his head on the lap, and then after 1 minute, on the other boy's lap. And this is one incident which Swami narrates. And it seems there was another person in that village, an elderly man who had no family, he had not married. And he used to walk with great difficulty and come and sit where the Satyama temple is. And one day in the evening, when Swami was going back to his house, this man accosted Swami. Okay, and he was apparently not in talking terms with Swami's father.
With Satyam's father.
Satyam's father. And so none of the people in the Raju family used to talk to this man. And little old bitter man, he used to be always, scowling and an unpleasant demeanor. But this person calls the little Satyam and says, you come and sit on my lap for some time. Okay, and he didn't know about what Swami had done with his little boys and all that. He was for some reason very fond of Swami, and he called him and he said, just come and spend some time with me, sit on my lap. And so he comes and sits on this old man's lap, and he's again surprised, because he came and sat there because they stiff muscle or something, when old people,
cramps,
when they,
like
something like cramps. And the moment Swami comes and sits, after a few minutes, his leg is feeling much better. Okay, and he says, And apparently that man says that you have no idea. You are going to be the light of thousands of people's life. That's what that man tells the little Swami.
Little Satya. Okay. You know, it reminds me, Prem, here at this point that, see, when we serve our parents, for example, when we press their feet, it's like we are doing a service to our parents. But when it comes to God, even in those instances where apparently we are doing a service to Him, it's actually we who are benefiting. See, in that case of those little boys, everybody wanted to, you know, serve little Satyam by allowing him to sleep on their lap. But if you see, their thing is that if he lies on your lap, you're not going to have leg pain. You're going to have a better health. They were benefited more. And actually, if you see, it was such a kind of inconvenience for Satyam. Every 3 minutes shifting his head from lap to lap to lap to lap. And that continued throughout his life, Prem. Even in the recent years, you know, for example, in a thrice session, you remember how all the boys would rush to the jhula and sit around him, so close, and everybody wanted to press Swami's feet. Usually pressing somebody's feet is like giving them comfort and massaging their feet. But it used to almost be like a fight. Almost 5 to 6 pairs of hands would clench the region between Swami's knee and Swami's heel and keep pressing and keep pulling. And some of the boys, I remember, would stretch from more than 1 meter back and somehow bend and somehow touch a part of Swami's toe. Actually, if we think about it, there will not be the slightest doubt that the boys were the beneficiaries and Swami was giving. It is not that the boys were giving a massage and Swami was a beneficiary. Even in getting himself served, the avatar just gives and gives and gives. It just makes me wonder at what limits of selflessness does he set. You know, even when it looks like he's getting served, he's actually serving, relentlessly serving.
And I think it's a perfect time to insert this incident I'm going to tell. You know, I really didn't want to tell it today because I've read it in a book. It's definitely authentic, but I couldn't trace back that book where I read it in. You know, there was this incident much later when after Swami's mandir came up. There used to be one lady who used to come for darshan. Okay, she used to look like a tribal woman, you know, very humbly dressed. And she would never come inside the mandir. She would always sit at the gate because she used to feel that, you know, there are village folk here. I mean, there are city folk here. They are little well-off people and I shouldn't mingle with them. They might feel uncomfortable when I go in. So she used to always sit at the gate of the mandir. And Swami would always make
this
it a point.
Is after the Prashanthi Nilayam
came after Prashant,
up. Much later.
I think after old mandir came up. This might
Patha
Mandir. Patha Mandiram times.
1945
Yeah, 1940s. In the late 1940s. But Swami would always make it a point to come out and talk to this lady. Something or the other. Swami would come and address something and, you know, give her some money, or Swami would give her some clothes. But Swami would never ignore her. She would never step into the mandir, but Swami would never ignore her. Okay, and there was this one boy who was always with Swami in those days, who used to be serving Swami personally. And he had noticed this happening a few times. And he was very curious, what is with this lady? Why Swami is giving her so much attention? Because there were other people who used to come and Swami was not responding in the way Swami was responding to this lady.
Okay.
So one day he asked Swami that, Swami, what's so special about that lady? You know, why do you go and talk to her? And Swami with a mischievous smile said that the next time she comes, you ask her. Ask her to tell her story. And this man is very curious and he's waiting for this lady to come. And the moment she comes, after darshan, he, you know, calls her aside and says, why does Swami always come and speak to you? And, you know, when did you come to Swami? And the kind of things like that. So then she goes on to tell her story. Okay, she says that, you know, she belongs to a kind of a tribal group, a nomadic group, which goes from forest to forest. And their only livelihood is they go into the forest, chop firewood and go into the nearest village and sell the firewood there. And then they would go to another forest. And invariably what they would do is follow the river, you know, any river which is there, from one forest to the other forest, following the river. So she says that at one particular point when they've camped near the river, she sees that a small child is being washed in the waters. A little child. And nobody there, maybe an infant, maybe less than a year or just a little over an year. So she jumps into the water and rescues the child. And she's wondering where this child has come from. So they go into the nearby village and find out, and they're not able to locate the parents of this child. So she says, for the next few months, she carries this child around, you know, wherever this nomadic group is going. And finally, they come to a particular village where she hears the local people talking of a child who is lost.
Okay,
who's missing, and the parents are very worried and all that. So she takes this child and goes into that village, and she's finds the parents and gives the child. Okay, and then comes the revelation. She says the child was Swami.
Oh,
this is not recorded in any other version, but you know this is there in a book. I've read it. You know, as I was saying, there might be so many such incidents which have just got lost.
Yeah, and dear listeners, though we have one or two official versions, there are so many books and not so many actually, there are a few books and there are so many accounts and narratives of people who came in those days, and all of them have had such fantastic experiences and absolutely no reason to lie. So, when we come across these, we cannot say with conviction that the history has been documented yet, because we too have been on a path of discovery, and as we shall see later in the satsang, there are many things that appear like discrepancies, but each of them, you know, bring out more and more of the glory of the Lord. For example, this episode that Prem narrated, it's not recorded anywhere about Swami being missing for a few days or a few weeks as a child. And just because it is not recorded, it does not mean that it did not happen. We have no way to confirm, we have nothing, but each of these stories, you know, Prem, I just don't care, you know, many times, because each of these stories, it just brings back to me how wonderful, what a beautiful Lord we have.
And there's a, you know, another story from Swami's childhood, which is revealed much later and in a very sweet way, you know. It's nothing great about the story as such. This is about a family in Anantapur. Mm. After many years, when Swami started traveling around and Swami declared himself, Swami went to this particular household where the mother had lost a 16-year-old child.
Mm.
Okay, a 16-year-old son. And that is when she sees Swami. And Swami is of the same age group. So, you know, spontaneously she has that motherly feeling towards Swami. And she's worshipping Swami at the same time looking at Swami as a mother.
Mm.
And that time, you know, Swami tells her that, "This is not the first time you're seeing me."
Okay.
Okay, and she's surprised and she says, "No, Swami, this is the first time I'm hearing about you and this is the first time I'm seeing you." Swami says, "No, you've seen me before." And she's surprised. And then Swami goes on to say that when I was 8 years old, I had come with my brother or sister to Anantapur. And then with my friends, I was playing outside your house. We were making a lot of noise. You came out and slapped me.
Huh.
And Swami says, "I remember, you're that lady." You should be, I don't know how, whether it will be pleasant or otherwise to listen to an account like this from Swami. But, you know, as I was saying, that so many devotees, so many people's lives Swami would have touched. And so many might be still around. We never know. People who would have seen Swami in those young ages, early years.
You know, as we spoke, Swami became a guru for all his friends, not only through his actions, but also through his conduct, through what he preached, through what he said, and through what he adhered to. I think this is a perfect time to take a break and come back to discuss more about Swami as the Guru. But before that, you know, just as we spoke about the Kalpavriksha, you know, Prem, something very poignant happened. I don't know, this is what inference that I am drawing. Of course, there can be many inferences. But a few months after Mahasamadhi, a bolt of lightning struck the Kalpavriksha, the tree which stands on top of the hill. And next day I remember going there and shedding profuse tears, Prema, because I thought, what is this happening? We had heard about, you know, after the Krishna avatar, everything related to Krishna just got destroyed. And it was almost looking like that, because, you know, some great devotees of the Lord, Prabha Sridharan aunty, who was responsible for the whole Vrindavan bhajan group there, you know, Swami had personally trained her into music. Then Dr. Savitramma, so many legendary kind of people, devotees, they just passed away, you know.
Dr. Raja Reddy, many of them, Dr. Padmanabhan.
And many of them passed away without even being aware that Swami had physically left.
Right.
Oh, blessed souls were they. And that is one side. And then these things happening. You know, the Kalpavriksha fell and it collapsed because the lightning struck it, and I remember that day I climbed up, you know, even thinking of that day I get tears in my eyes, went up to the Kalpavriksha and thought this was a wish fulfilling tree, and I cried out to the tree saying, "One Kalpavriksha has left us," you know, because Swami physically has left. "You also have left us." There was just a stump, lying there, you know, praying. And it was very, very, very painful. It was like when the moment comes to desert everyone, everything and everyone is deserting. But from a few months after that, I climbed back the same hill.
Mm-hmm.
From that apparently dead stump,
mm-hmm.
a beautiful, strong, youthful, exuberant shoot had come out. Mm-hmm. And today that shoot has grown to almost 2 to 2.5 meters. It's bearing fresh leaves and it looks so vibrant and fantastic. And again, people have almost started tying, you know, people tie their wishes to a Kalpavruksha saying that the wishes come true. Slowly they've started tying to it. Now, of course, the authorities have taken more precaution, safety, trying to protect it from termites and other things, you know. Suddenly when you realize that something is gone, means it's gone. But seeing that, it gave me great hope, because I felt the Kalpavruksha was telling that, listen, you told me that one Kalpavruksha left and the other Kalpavruksha has left. You felt that both Kalpavrukshas have left. I felt that the tree was telling me both Kalpavrukshas have not left. Just as I'm back here in a new avatar, in a fresh, young, completely in a way that will thrill your heart and give you joy, the Kalpavruksha that you think has left also will sprout and blossom in a manner that you never imagined. And just like here, you know, it was again another message that till now, you know, people took the Kalpavruksha for granted. Anytime you want, it's there on top of the hill. Anytime you can go and see it. But after that lightning, see all the precaution measures that have been taken, and see the way all those illegal shops have been demolished, and it has become so, you know, people have given so much importance. In the same way too, once you realize how it is, you suddenly start giving importance and you realize the value. And now you are able to cherish the same thing to a much greater extent. And dear listeners, anyone who visits Puttaparthi, definitely please take some time and visit this Kalpavruksha too, for it has a great history and it has this great message to give all of us.
And the whole of Puttaparthi, in fact, Arvind, I'm sure, you know, when we read Satyam Shyam Sundaram, almost every rock of this land must have been touched by his foot, because he, you know, as a child, he's climbed all over this place. And as we're going to come to that episode of the Pandhari Bhajan group.
Yeah, but
before that, we'll take a break, because we've spoken for quite some time now. We're going to play for you a beautiful song, dear listeners. And this was the song actually was composed by Sri Prakash Rao, who has written a lot of dramas and songs for Swami. And the first time Swami heard this, Swami was so fascinated by the song, because he imagined as though if Ishwarama was singing the song to Swami.
Yes, this is a lullaby song.
Right.
And it was written with that mood of Ishwaramma rocking that little baby Satyam to sleep, singing out this lullaby. And it says that, you know, we are so blessed because that same little boy of the Repalle village, you know, in Andhra, the village in which Krishna was born is termed as Repalle.
Right.
So it says that little baby of Repalle has come into our village. How blessed are we, O little Gopala, O my little Krishna, go to sleep. That is the lullaby song that we will be playing now. It's in Telugu, but the tune makes it so magical, and we can listen to it and enjoy it. Beautiful song indeed, Prem. Dear listeners, hope you enjoyed it. Professor Kasturi, you know, when he refers to Swami, he makes a very beautiful comparison.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Swami is born in the clan, the Ratnakaram clan. Ratnakara is a term that is used for the ocean actually.
Right.
You know, Ratnakara means the ocean. And why it is called, why the term is used is because it is the ocean that yields to us pearls and many gems.
The Ratnas.
Ratnas. And therefore, it's called Ratnakara. And Kasturi writes about Swami saying that the Ratnakara had yielded the greatest ever Ratna it ever could. And that was little Satyam. Because he was born of the Ratnakara Kula. So I feel that description is so apt for Swami. The greatest gem of the Ratnakara Kula. You know, that is the beauty of the Sanskrit and Telugu language, which unfortunately cannot be translated exactly into English. In Sanskrit or Telugu, it will be that Swami was the greatest Ratna of the Ratnakara Kula.
And a very beautiful song in the lyrics, you know, where thinking of it from Ishwarama's point of view, where Ishwarama is saying that, are you Krishna, are you Shiva, or are you the Jagan Mohini herself?
Mm.
Who are you? But whatever you are, you have become the light of our lives. You become the source of joy for all of us.
That also, you know, in many bhajans, for example, we have Ratnakara Kula
Kuladipa, right.
The light of the whole clan.
Yeah, absolutely. And going back to Swami's childhood, as we're talking, you know, the Pandhari Bhajan group, which was a very, very important episode in Swami's childhood. As, you know, Swami was saying, Swami was about 7-8 years old, when those children were, you know, growing more and more fond of Swami.
Hmm.
Swami found that as a very important part of Swami's childhood, where he turned people to singing the glory of the Lord. When he found, when, you know, we talk of bhajans being one of the most important activity of the ashram. Because the other day, you know, somebody was asking me, someone was in a lot of stress in their work. Mm-hmm. He was quite a senior officer at his job, and he was asking that, what does Swami say? What spiritual practice does Swami teach? Is there any kind of meditation which Swami has taught? Is there any kind of spiritual sadhana which Swami has taught?
Mm.
And you know, when he asked me that question, when I looked at what Swami has told us and what the activities of the ashram are, almost the singular activity which Swami has given so much emphasis on is bhajan singing.
Right.
The only thing which we do sitting there in the place where Swami sat and gave us darshan all these years is Vedam chanting and bhajan singing.
And not only during these specified times, Prem. I remember many times, you know, a program would conclude, and after the program is over, it's almost like Swami is interacting with the members who performed and, you know, giving them chances of a lifetime. This, especially in the last 4-5 years, happened almost 10 to 15 days every month.
Right.
There would be a program and Swami would interact with them. And invariably, when Swami would, you know, they have finished their program, but it is not time for aarti because Swami is interacting with all of them. Invariably, Swami would just look at the bhajan group and say, do bhajans. It was almost as if nothing else is happening, do bhajans. If nothing else is happening, do bhajans. It was like a message that Swami was giving for our daily life also. You're doing your work, it's okay. You're having your food, it's okay. If you come to a point in time where you're doing nothing, you know, an idle mind is a devil's workshop, do bhajans. Do bhajan. Bhajan is singing the glory of the Lord. You need not just sing it aloud. Sing it within you. But do bhajan. This was the message that Swami was giving, and you know, it is so inspiring. It is so wonderful to know that at such a tender age itself, he started propagating that message.
Right, and that's what Swami did with these little playmates of his.
Hmm.
You know, as I said, he would wake them up early in the morning and take them to the river and make them have bath. And Swami would say some of them would be very tiny, that Swami would give them bath. No,
why is it called the Pandhari Bhajan group? What is?
Yeah, actually what happened was, you know, in one particular discourse, Swami says that it was a period in time when cholera and plague started, you know, surfacing in that locality. A lot of people were falling for these diseases.
Hmm.
And everybody was scared, and there was, you know, little kind of quarantine in the village. People were told not to go outside the villages. And people who were coming from outside the villages used to be very restricted.
Scrutinized.
Yeah, and especially as small children, they were not allowed to go out of the house.
Hmm.
So that was when Swami said that, you know, why don't we sing do bhajans. Swami said, why don't we do bhajans?
And to combat cholera.
Right. And his little children asked, what is bhajans? What do you mean by bhajans? And Swami said, we have to sing the glories of the Lord. We have to sing in praise of God. And we will go around the streets of Puttaparthi. Okay, then the children said that we don't know any songs. What songs are there?
Hmm.
So Swami wrote some bhajans.
Okay.
Okay, and it is called Pandari Bhajan Group because, you know, it was very popular in Pandharpur. Where people used to sing.
Lord Vithala.
Right, Lord Vithala.
I remember, Prem, even to this day, you know, they are called the Varkaris. The Varkaris, they, as part of their annual pilgrimage to Pandharpur, during that festival time, Ashadi Ekadashi, from wherever they are located in Maharashtra, you know, they actually sing bhajans, dancing in ecstasy of the divine name and the divine form in their mind's eye, and they go up to Pandharpur. And that kind of bhajans is known as Pandhari bhajans.
Right.
And I think that is what Swami made his friends also do. That is, have the Lord's form in the mind's eye and the Lord's name on your lips. Sing aloud.
Right. And Swami had composed so many bhajans, you know, in praise of Krishna. And they used to do small enactments. Like, you know, it slowly started growing where first they just sang. Then they started finding costumes for themselves. Swami would say, I think Swami had chosen a color for the whole group, right?
Exactly. Swami was so particular about the color that it is recorded that Swami got a dye pot. You know, to make a dye, you have to boil that dye in water and then put the clothes.
Right.
Once all the children had put in their shirts, and when they came out, they were a saffron color, you know.
Right.
Swami had donned the saffron color at that young age of maybe hardly, he was 7 or 8, I think, when this started, the Pandari Bhajan group.
Right.
So the costume for the a singer, you know, it was a privilege to be in the Pandari Bhajan group. Not everybody would get in because you had to follow, you know, some strict regulations. Like you have to get up early, you have to wear this. And then apart from the shirt, a towel would be tied around the waist.
Right.
And they would hold the chakka, as it's called. A chakka is a wooden block with some jingles attached.
Right.
Yes, rhythm and beat. So the chakkas in hand, a flag in the other hand.
Anklets.
And then a towel around the waist with a orange or saffron colored shirt.
Right.
That was the costume.
And Swami started, you know, gathering these people, and they would go around the village singing these bhajans which Swami had written.
Did they combat cholera?
And Swami says that it took 3 days for them to finish all the streets. And by then the cholera had vanished from the village.
And that must be the reason why the Pandhari Bhajan group, as it suddenly became famous, because Puttaparthi had been spared of the cholera.
Right.
And nobody got affected. They were invited to neighboring villages.
Exactly.
Because it was felt that if Swami comes, if the Pandhari Bhajan group comes, if bhajans come, diseases go.
Actually, there's another incident which happened because of which the Pandhari Bhajan group also became popular.
Okay.
And that was when Swami had written one bhajan about the avatar of Narasimha.
Oh, Narasimha avatar.
The Narasimha avatar.
That is the fourth avatar of Lord Vishnu.
Okay, where Vishnu appears as half man and half lion.
Okay.
Okay, and it's supposed to be a very, very, I don't know what is the word for that. It's born out of anger. That avatar is coming to protect Prahlada.
Okay.
So that
righteous ire.
Yeah, it is supposed to be an avatar which signifies temper and anger and, you know, that
the Raudra.
Yeah,
call it.
The quality of the qualities of a lion.
Hmm.
Okay. So at one particular point when they were performing this bhajan, it seems Swami behaved as though he was possessed by the Narasimha avatar.
Okay.
As believed by the villagers.
Okay.
Of course, now we know it's not a question of being possessed. You know, and Swami started becoming, even as a child, you know, Swami was 7 or 8 years old, but Swami's eyes became red. Swami's face, you know, expressed the temper in a way nobody has seen, because the Satyam which they knew was not this.
The sweet
nature. Okay, and he jumped and he, you know, the elderly villagers came and held Swami, but they couldn't control him. Such was his strength. And finally they had to come and break coconuts and offer aarti. And then Swami subsided and Swami became calm and came back to his normal self. And this news also spread. You know, and people started believing that the Lord manifests when this bhajan group sings bhajans.
And the Lord possesses this particular boy.
Right.
You know, this is not the only case, Prem. I also remember another episode which Swami himself has narrated in a discourse too. This Hanuman temple that we have in Puttaparthi, it existed even then.
Right.
And on one occasion, when all the students, not the students, I mean all his friends, and Satyam were there, they decided to circumambulate the Hanuman temple. Because that is a practice, you know, in the Hindu temples when we go around the idol three times as a mark of respect.
Right.
But when this was told to Satyam, Satyam refused to go around. He said, no, I will not come around. Then they thought, what is this? This is very odd, because here was their guru who always taught them things about God, worship, and here was he refusing to do an act of worship. So they forced him and Satyam agreed then. And then as they were just going around the temple, a huge monkey popped out from nowhere and went, and all the boys got scared because they were all little boys and the monkey was almost their size. But Satyam just stood calm. The other boys ran away, you know, leaving God. leaving Satyam. And Satyam is standing there, the monkey comes and just stands in Satyam's way. Doesn't allow him to proceed a step ahead, but doesn't do anything else otherwise. And then Swami revealed that, see, this is Hanuman. It's always the devotee who goes around the Lord's temple. Okay, and Swami is the Lord of Hanuman. He is Lord Rama, you know. And therefore Hanuman himself had come to tell, Lord, please don't go around me. I am supposed to go around you. And that is what the monkey did. It went around Satyam thrice and then went back from wherever it came from. So there were many episodes like this which showed that at that time it was perceived as Satyam being possessed by gods. But today we know that he possessed all the gods, because he is the summum bonum of all the lords.
And one more thing which Swami did during that time was, you know, as we saw earlier, Swami had given up non-vegetarian food, even though he was born in a family which was eating non-vegetarian food. Mm. And so because he had a sway over all these little children, he started encouraging them to give up cruelty towards animals.
That was something, non-vegetarian,
right,
food non-vegetarian
food and cruelty towards animals. Because, you know, villages of those days, we know the kind of competitions and entertainments which were there. One was having that cock fight. They used to tie a knife to the feet of a cock
rooster,
and they would, you know, pit one against the other, and eventually one would die. That would be the way the game ends. And Swami used to feel very pained, you know, the little boy used to feel so pained about this event, and he would go and tell the children that make sure that you make some havoc in your family, make some noise, make sure that they don't send their cocks to the fight.
The other was the bullock cart race.
Right, in the bullock cart race. In the summer months when Swami used to say, the Chitravati used to dry up on the riverbed of Chitravati. Swami used to have this, I mean, they used to have that bullock cart race.
Mm.
And where they used to hold the tail of the bullock cart and twist it and whip the backs of the bullock carts.
The tail of the bullocks.
Sorry, the tail.
They used to hold the tail of the bullocks, twist it and even poke nails into them to make them, egg them to run faster.
Run faster.
So that they can win and, you know, be crowned as the village racing champions. I mean.
Right. And Swami used to, you know, go and tell these children, do whatever you want, but make your parents, and, you know, make sure that your parents don't send their animals for such events. And, you know, at one particular, in one discourse, Swami says that this kind of irritated some of the elders. So they come and complain to Venkamaraju and Ishramma, saying that, you know, your boy is trying to act too smart.
Mm.
He's doing all this. These are all traditions which have been there for so many years and he's trying to change it and all that kind of stuff, you know. And it seems that at one particular point, Ishramma calls him and says that, why do you do all this?
Mm.
You know, why don't you stick to things of your age, being your age, you know. And Swami said, I'm not scared. And she says that you will get a bad name. And Swami tells, what bad name are you talking? When I've done what is right, how can I get a bad name? If I get a bad name, why should I care about it? Because I've done what is right.
Well, I think that is a message for all of us. When we are on the right path, we need not worry about a bad name. And in case we get a bad name, apparently, it's nothing to care about.
Right.
We have to be true to our heart and know that we are on the right path. Then we just go ahead with all confidence. Because Swami says, truth has no fear. Untruth will shiver at every little shadow.
Like one quotation I read long back, you know, and say, when you do the right thing, those who mind do not matter, and those who matter
do
won't
mind. Wow. Swami also used this same sentence in one of the discourses.
Okay.
Oh. Yes, I remember, maybe in 2002 or 2003. But you know, Prem, it's not that all the children loved Satyam. As we see in our school days also, polarization of kinds happen. There are 2-3 groups in every class, and every group centers around 2-3 boys who happen to be like the leaders of the group. The same was the case in Puttaparthi also. And so there were some others who used to be very jealous of Satyam and his group, because they were the most popular ones. They were loved by everyone. Everyone praised them. Everyone spoke about them. And whatever they seemed to do seemed to be a success. Even when they went against age-old established customs like, as we said, cockfighting or bullock cart races, the other children who were not ready to cooperate, they thought that Satyam was fighting a losing battle. But they saw that everywhere he met with success. So they were very jealous. And there are records of how whenever, you know, Swami used to cross, Satyam used to cross the Chitravati, these boys would come and, you know, throw thorns into his beautiful curly locks. Because, you know, they would get stuck there and it would be painful for the boy to pull them out. And then push him into the mud, drag him in the water, soil his clothes. And you know what was Swami's response? Little Satyam just didn't respond. He just kept a smile on the face. And he did it for so long that finally those boys felt ashamed of themselves. They thought, how can we do such things to someone who is so sweet? And he transformed their heart through sheer love. You know, and so he became a guru not only for those to whom he was dear, whom he was a darling to. Those who were jealous of him, who were irritated by him, those who were angry and those who positively hated him too, began to love him and consider him as a guru. And this is magic.
About this particular episode, Swami used to say, in discourses Swami used to describe, that in those days, Swami would say, I had only one pair of clothes, one pair of uniform or whatever you call, you know.
Mm.
And Swami would say that when these boys used to come and tear up those, they used to tear his shirt and all that. So, and there were no, you know, what you call that safety pin, even that the family wouldn't have. And Swami would say that he would go and near Satyama temple, there used to be a cacti, you know, plant.
Cactus plant, huh?
Okay, and he used to go to that cactus plant, pluck the thorn and use that as a safety pin.
Yes, his life is one of great personal sacrifice.
And you know, the most important thing, and it will again come in other episodes which are to follow, you know, where Swami would say that in all these situations, Swami always made sure that his family would not be shown in poor light to other children.
Correct.
That was something which Swami was very particular about. And another incident Swami mentions is, you know, for lunch, the mother used to pack for him, what do you call, sankati? That ragi ball.
Ragi is a kind of cereal.
Right, it's a kind of a...
high in protein and starch.
It's very good for health, but it is difficult to eat because it's a little tough to eat. You know,
exactly.
With time it becomes hard.
It's having a lot of fiber in it.
Right, and Swami used to say how Mother Isharma used to pack, you know, a ball of sankati. She used to make a hole in that and pour some chutney into it. And it used to be tied in a cloth. Okay, and Swami would say by the time the lunch bell would ring, that would become really hard. So Swami would say, I have to go and dip it with the cloth in the river. Okay, and then eat it. Okay, and Swami would go and heat, you know, go away from the rest of the crowd and eat there so that people don't know that his family is packing that for lunch.
Yes, he is always...
Right, that was something which always, you know, even when I used to hear it from Swami, it used to stand out. Swami would always say that your family honor is so important. Mm-hmm. Whatever difficulties, whatever hardships are there, you have to go through it silently.
Parade it in public.
Without anybody else knowing what you're going through.
And at home, you know, home also, we know that academically he was so brilliant.
Brilliant.
And he showed his compassionate heart even in the elementary school in Puttaparthi. You know, the teacher there had a very peculiar habit. Apparently, he would have a kind of cut-off number. Say, first 15. After that, whoever would come into the class, irrespective of the time, would get a beating from with the cane. You know, so a person who comes third after that gets 3 lashes. A person who comes fourth will get 4 lashes.
Right.
And in order to avoid this beating, all the little boys of the village would arrive very early to the school so that as the teacher comes and opens the door itself, they are all there.
It should be difficult to find out who's first.
Who is first, who is last. So this was the strategy they used. But since they used to arrive early in the morning, they would be feeling very cold, shivering in the cold. At that time, you know, Satya, always concerned about others, he would raid the family kitchen and get things for these boys to eat in the morning. He would even get off the clothes. And it is said that, you know, the mother and father would lock the store, the clothes store, so that he doesn't give away, because they were not a well-to-do family. And his ideal behavior didn't stop at school. It continued at home also. In fact, he would always, you know, be of the helpful nature. He would wash clothes at home. He would do the dishes. He would do sweeping. He would do mopping. And so much that people all often felt that he was like the daughter of the house. You know, and if we read that book called Love Is My Form, that's a comprehensive treatise, if I can say so, on Swami's early life. Mr. Padmanabhan, who compiled that book, is today Dr. Padmanabhan because of that book. You know, he has been given an honorary doctorate.
Oh, okay.
That is the kind of effort that has gone in compiling that magnificent book. And I feel after Satyam Shivam Sundaram was the first and done in 1960, this kind of comprehensive collection of photographs, data, it's a huge book, more than 1,000 pages, but magnificent, and I have read through that, that's why I'm saying. In that book, it is recorded that they used to call Satyam as Adamari Satyakka. Means Satyakka means Satya the sister. The Satya the sister who is like a girl. They used to call him that way because he used to help in everything at home. But it is not only at home. He would also help his father in his little shop.
Right.
He would be an expert at bargaining and, you know, getting the best rates. And therefore the father thought that this son of mine is going to be a great successor for me. The mother felt that he's going to be a great help.
Right. Father had a very small shop. I think till much later, even after Prashandilyam came up, Swami would say that his father had a shop in the village.
Exactly. So that kind of relationship he shared, where the mother felt that I'm so lucky to have this son. The father felt that I'm so lucky to have this son. The siblings felt that, I don't know if they actually felt at that time, but they were indeed lucky to have such a sibling who would be always sacrificing for their sake. And what to say of the grandfather? He too felt that he was so blessed to have Satyam as a grandson.
And I think Swami had a very, very intimate and beautiful relationship with his grandfather. And you could see that with the fondness with which Swami used to narrate about his grandfather. And literally Swami used to speak as though he was his first devotee.
Exactly, Prem. And if we see the things that Kondamaraju did, we realize that Kondamaraju was specially blessed. He was the first to get to know that Satyam is not just an ordinary boy, but a divine incarnation. And therefore, I think he deserves the title, definitely, of being the first devotee of Swami. But at this point, I think we'll take a break. We'll play that immortal, ever-fresh song sung by Kavita Krishnamurti, which sings how glorious good fortune is that of Ishwaramma, because she got the chance to mother the divine child. And before we conclude today's satsang, after the song, we'll come back with the beautiful relationship that existed between Kondamaraju and little Satya.
Bhakti, Bhakti, Bhagavant Guru, Chatushnam Bapue, Tinke Pad Vandan Kiye, Metat Vighan Ane. Yeah.
Welcome back, dear listeners. Yes, as we were discussing, the grandfather, Kondamaraju, was the foremost among the devotees of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. You know, as early as when Satyam was a 3 or 4 year old boy, Kondamaraju walked up to his daughter-in-law, that is Mother Ishwaramma, and he offered prostrations to her. She was shocked, you know. How will a daughter-in-law feel if her father-in-law is prostrating to her? And when that shock was expressed on her face, he told her that you think you're an ordinary woman. You do not know you're very special. The Lord has taken birth in your womb. This is what he told Ishwaramma. And as we had discussed earlier, it was Kondamaraju who named her as Ishwaramma, because she is the Amma for Ishwara, the mother for the Lord.
You know, talking of, we've had discussions of choosing God and why we should choose God. And I think one of the first persons to choose Swami was also Kondamaraju.
Correct.
Because a very interesting incident happened, as you know, we spoke about last week. It was a huge family, the Raju household, where the grandmother and grandfather, Kondamaraju, and his wife, Lakshmanamma, I think. And
Correct.
He had two sons, Peddavenkamaraju and
Chinnavenkamaraju,
and a daughter who was also staying in the same house. So it was a huge family, and the daughter had her own children, and the other two brothers had their children, a huge family. Children alone were about 15-20 of them. Okay, and then as it happens in many families, there was a little bit of a squabble because of which they had to separate. They had to live in separate houses. And it was also the time when I think Kondamaraju lost his wife.
Correct.
Okay, so they decided that each of these families would split. And they came up with a plan that the father, Kondamaraju, could stay in each of these houses for a period of 6 months.
Okay.
And rotate amongst the children. So he would spend 6 months in the son's house and the next son's house and the daughter's house. But you know, Kondamaraju was not happy with this arrangement. He said, no, I want to live separately. One more reason was Kondamaraju also was a vegetarian.
Okay.
Because he didn't want to eat from the same kitchen where
non-vegetarian
food is being prepared. So he said, no, I would stay separately. And he said, you can take all the property. He divided the property among his children. He said, just give me one property. Give me Satyam. He said, I don't want anything else. I'll stay separately. You just give Satyam to me.
And with that, he got everything else.
Right. And
what a message that is, no, Prem. Choose God, choose Satyam, and you'll get everything in life.
And as I said, yeah, he was one of the first person to choose Swami. And at that tender age, this, as Kasturi puts it, the great grandfather and the great grandson start living together. And beautiful things happen. One of the incidents which Swami narrated in a discourse was, you know, when Swami was sleeping once, Kondamaraju starts listening, I mean, hearing the sound of Omkaram.
Where?
Where, in that room where Swami was sleeping, and even Kondamaraju was also in the same room.
Okay.
So he looks around and finally realizes that the sound is actually coming from Swami's breath.
It's emanating from Satyam.
Swami's, the little boy Satyam was lying there, Swami's breath. That was one of the experiences which he has. And Swami, used to narrate how that schedule Swami had, you know.
Swami would cook food for his grandfather.
Right.
And I remember in the discourse Swami saying, immediately after saying that I used to cook for my grandfather, immediately Swami said, I was a very good cook. And Kondamaraju would love what I would cook.
Right.
And most importantly, in fact, for Kondamaraju was the fact that Satyam was also an absolute vegetarian.
Right.
And so he was sure that whatever is being cooked in the kitchen is pure vegetarian food. And he was so touched with the service that Satyam was doing. You know, where do we see a grandchild staying with the grandparent, taking care? You know, in it's a day and age today where many times, you know, we come across parents who lie neglected. Grandparents, they are absolutely neglected. In such a scenario, little Satyam taught such a powerful message that we already spoke about maintaining family honor, and here was he standing up for his grandfather and serving him till the end of his days.
Another thing which happened, you know, again, Swami was cooking Sankati most of the time, that ragi meal.
Mm.
And what Swami would do is, early in the morning, Swami used to wake up and get ready and, you know, cook for his grandfather, then go to school.
Mm.
And during the lunch hour, Swami used to come running back all the way home to serve food for his grandfather and also eat himself. Mm. And then run back. Swami would say he would jog all the way back and forth. And at one point, you know, Kondam Raju says that, why do you come back just for serving me? Why didn't you pack your food and take it?
Mm.
And I'll serve myself, I'll have my lunch. And the same thing, you know, Swami was eating Sankati when all the other children were eating rice.
Mm.
Swami did not want them to know that he was coming from a family which was a little underprivileged.
Mm.
So Swami said, no, it even though it is a little bit of effort for me to run and come, this way I can save my family's honor. So Swami would do that.
Wow.
And you know, every little incident, Swami was actually teaching very, very profound lessons for all of us.
And I think the most conclusive statement that shows that Kondam Raju was less of a grandfather and more of a devotee is when he told Satya, one day as Satya was, you know, massaging his feet, he calls little Satyam and holds his hand and says, little Satyam, please, you know, consider these as your feet. It is often said, you know, in tradition that an elder should never fall at the feet of a younger person, because a younger person gets great sin because of that,
right.
Great demerit. So Kondam Raju here did not, you know, want in any way to be cause for any kind of bad thing for little Satyam. So he held his hand and he said, Satyam, please consider these as your feet. And this is my prayer. Promise me that when I die, you will come and pour water into my mouth. It is believed that if the Lord pours water into the mouth, you will not have any more births. And this was a privilege. If we see the different avatars, very few enjoyed. In fact, in the Rama avatar, Rama's own father, Dasharatha, did not get this chance of being fed with water through Lord Rama's hands, which the bird Jatayu got. So this is an honor, a privilege that is reserved for a very rare few. And Kondam Raju, the great grandfather, I mean, in the pun intended.
Great by virtue of his values and of his true greatness. And you know, if you look at Swami's family, I think Kondam Raju was one of those few people in Swami's family who had the ability to break past that relationship. Because as we would see later, be it Swami's parents, be it Swami's elder brother, sisters, for a long time they were not able to see beyond that relationship which they had with Swami.
As a brother or as a son.
Right. Mm. But here, Kondam Raju was one of those people who managed to do that. Who could, you know, even in spite of being in that grandfatherly, showering the grandfatherly love on his grandson, he knew what, you know, he was dealing with, if you could put it that way.
Mm.
And another interesting thing which Swami used to say is, even when Swami was staying in the grandfather's house, people started flocking to Kondam Raju's house to see Swami. And you know, it was a very weird thing, because here was a maybe 6 or 7 year old boy, and people are coming and just to see this little Satyam. And they would say, no, I had some ailment, and this boy came in my dream and removed that ailment from me.
Oh, wow.
You know, incidents such as these started happening. And the other thing was that famous rasam which Swami used to tell, you know.
The pepper rasam.
The pepper rasam. Swami would say that he was an expert at it. And the moment Swami makes that rasam, the aroma used to draw people from the neighborhood. And everybody would come with their vessel and they'd say, you know, I'm having cold, I'm having cough, I'm having fever. And Swami would make for all of them. And Swami was beginning to become popular. Actually, that was the time when Sesha Maharaju, Swami's elder brother, felt that, you know, he is getting drawn from his studies. He's getting distracted, and he said, I will take him to Kamalapuram.
Prem, I am also getting very distracted. Your description of the rasam, you know, is making me salivate, feel hungry. Dear listeners, it's 2 p.m. in our studios. It's time for the radio, the afternoon satsang to conclude and give way to the next segment of the program. As always, it has been a great privilege and a pleasure to be part of this satsang, and it is with great gratitude and humility that we offer this at the lotus feet of our dear Sai. And as stated in the beginning, we will be continuing the Satyam Shivam Sundaram series on a fortnightly basis. And please do write to us all that you wish to share so that we can make it part of the satsang, for it is a part of our satsang. And as always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org.
So for the topic for the next week, that we will leave it for you to unravel it the next week. But for the next Satyam Shivam Sundaram, we'll be traveling to Kamalapuram with Swami and seeing all of the beautiful incidents happen, because Kamalapuram was a very, very special episode in Swami's life. A lot of things Swami did, and maybe a few incidents which he might have left out. If we have overlooked them, we will try to cover them also.
Yeah, it's not that Swami did a lot of things in Kamalapuram. It is just that he was kind enough to allow them to get recorded.
Absolutely. So, dear listeners, thank you for your company and offering the segment and all efforts at Swami's Lotus Feet. We're going to leave you with a song. Chandu is already here in the studio and he'll be taking you through the segment Love to Love after this.
Gopala Bala Sai, Gokula Lila Sai, Gopala Bala Sai, Gokula Lila Sai, Bhaktula Paitema Sai, Bhakta Rakshaka Sai, Gopala Bala Sai, Gokula Lila Sai, Bhaktula Paitema Sai, Bhakta Kasai Gopal Balasai Putapati Nilaya Sai Bhakta Pujita Sai Putapati Nilaya Sai Bhakta Pujita Sai Putapati Nilaya Sai Bhakta Pujita Sai Deva Deva Sai Dina Rakshaka Satya Sai Deva 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 Sai Dina Rakshaka Satya Sai Gopal Bala Sai Gokula Lila Sai Bhaktula Paitema Sai Bhakta Rakshaka Sai Gopal Bala Sai Gopal Bala Sai.